Well, Conte to part Euro. If Italy win the Euros and Immobile's top goal scorer, I'll sing the entire song to you in Italian.
Hey!
Myself and Immobile on top.
For the best Euro 2020 coverage, download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the OTB Football Podcast.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetsetGo. Are you ready for quick start car insurance? Get a quote today at GetsetGo.ie.
The Football Show on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power's Save Our Game. Donating at least 100,000 to Irish football via England Goals this summer.
Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
I'm prepared to anything I can.
Well, do it then. Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
Ah, it wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Great to have you along. Day six of the Euros is coming to a close. Italy 1-0 up, second half just starting again. Switzerland, Wales 2, Turkey 0 from earlier on. Ramsey and Bale in particular looking very good. Wales suddenly through to the knockout stages, and Russia, after a very disappointing round one, beat Finland by a 1-0. Always great to say Damon Delaney is on the show, which he is. How you doing?
Hi Joe, how are you?
Yeah, very well. How's the form?
Really good, yeah, really good. Enjoying watching the football. Sunshine's finally come back, and life is quite good at the minute.
Good man. I hear you're taking to the bike.
Yeah. I always had a little desire for cycling. I always really enjoyed it. It was something I found when I was in the playing football in the off season. I found it was a really, really good way to, I want to say keep fit, but keep the weight off, to be honest with you, because, you know, and obviously the low impact, but obviously in your summer holidays, you have, your diet kind of goes a little bit, maybe a couple of beers too many, and I also found the best way to get back in the same shape you left was cycling. I kind of kept that up when I finished playing football. Been doing it for the last number of years, and I'm getting out 3 or 4 times a week, really.
Oh, good man. What kind of mileage are we talking here?
I would do anything from 25 to 50, but the 25Ks would be in the hills. Would just be like 4 or 5 big hills, really, with an average speed of maybe, say, 20, 22 kilometres an hour. But then sometimes I go on a nice big long flat towards Kinsale and Cork here, nice. And you can get up to good little speeds.
Good man. Very good. Good for the head as well, I'm sure.
Absolutely. I mean, ultimately, that is what it's great for. You always feel better when you come back. And obviously, I'm not competitive because I'm not on Strava or any of these apps, or I don't play or don't race anybody. I just go out, and if I feel good, I get the head down, and if I don't, I just get through it. And I just kind of, as I said, just use it to keep the weight in check, really.
Good man. Well, look, you're wasting away there from what I can see, so you're grand. Would you go easy? You're making the rest of us feel bad. So, look, I have so much to talk to you about. I want to throw a bunch of things at you. But first, I want to invoke session one of the Damien Delaney fan club, if that is okay. So I'm going to kick things off here on the Euros show earlier on this afternoon. Former teammate of yours at Crystal Palace. Do you know who I'm talking about? Did you see any of this?
I got a text message through. I didn't watch it, no. One of the producers texted me earlier with a link to it, but I never got around to watching it. So okay. I think it's Danny Gabbiadon, is that right?
It sure is. He was at Palace, what, from what, 12 to 14, so he overlapped with your time there. So he was on with Shane Hannan and John Duggan today. He was there to look ahead to Wales-Turkey, not to talk about you, but you came up. You came up. So here's clip one of two. This is the Damien Delaney fan group. So here's what Danny Gabbiadon had to say about you.
Damien Delaney, a good teammate of Palace.
Yeah, Damo, yeah.
He's a regular here, Danny. He's a regular.
Is he?
Yeah.
You know what? When he was playing, I never, ever would have thought that he would have gone down the punditry media side, to be honest with you. He just didn't seem that kind of guy. He was one of them. I thought when he finishes playing, you'll just get his guitar out and you'll just be learning to play the guitar. You'll see him down the pub having a few drinks and stuff like that. But no, I mean, I got on really well with Damo. You know, we spent a lot of time together, kind of off the pitch as well at Crystal Palace. Scott's known really well. And what he was able to do kind of back end of his career there was unbelievable. Similar situation to me where he came into Palace and, you know, had been thinking about hanging up his boots because he was a bit disillusioned with the game and just went there not really knowing what he was looking for. And, you know, we ended up then having 4 or 5, I think it was, really good seasons and getting back in the Premier League and performing at a high level. And yeah, and now he's taken a liking to the media side of things. Well, I have to say he speaks really well actually as well, so So he's a bit of a natural of that as well. So, but I've spoken to him for a while. So next time you see him, guys, if you could wish him my best, then that would, I'd be really really thankful, because he's a brilliant guy. Brilliant guy, to be fair.
We'll have to get you both on together at some point.
Jeez, Johnny Gabaldon seems like a horrible fella, Damien.
No, listen, I tell you,
what a gent.
Honestly, a Rolls Royce of a human being.
Yeah, he seems that way.
I mean, honestly, when he says me and him spend a lot of time together, we did. We were a similar age. We had very similar interests. You know, if I had a pound for every coffee or beer me and him had on the King's Road in Chelsea, I'd be doing all right. So we used to spend so much time in London, because he lived in town as well. So we used to just meet up after training and go for a coffee. Just a beer when the time presented. And I tell you one thing, the best dressed man in football. I mean that, like, the best dressed man I know in football. Every day he came in like he was like understated class, you know, not ostentatious or not out there. Just subtly, you look at him and you find yourself nodding, going, "Jeez, he looks good today, Dan, doesn't he?"
You realise that plain black jumper he's wearing is 800 quid. That kind of a guy.
That type of understated, yes.
I just love what it says about you, that Gabaldon's sense of what you would be doing with your life now was, quote, learning guitar and drinking in a pub.
Yeah.
He just thinks he just would booze for the next 40 years. So I don't know what that says about you, but that was his best guess.
We had a few drinks for the 4 years we were together, in fairness. Maybe he probably thought that was going to continue. But I don't know. Yeah, I was playing guitar a lot at the time, and me and him were single at the same time in London. So we just kind of fell in with each other. A lot of the other lads were married and settled down and whatnot. And neither of us were massive like nightclub people or you know, binge drinkers, that type of thing.
Okay.
So we spent an awful lot of time together because our interests married up really, really well. But as I said, an absolute Rolls Royce of a human being, really is.
Jeez, you sound like a classy pair, in fairness. So are you still trying to play the guitar?
I still play not as much as I used to.
Do you want to play us out this evening with something?
Absolutely not, I tell you. I don't play regularly enough now. So, but the guitars are still hanging around the house there. So they're just lying there gathering dust at the minute.
All right.
But
listen,
maybe at some point we might
set you a task to play us out for the Euros final, which may include Italy. They've gone 2-0 up now against Switzerland. I'm just waiting here to see a replay. I know you've got the TV on in front of you there. So we're seeing Roberto Mancini. Still very slim, Mancini, there in his suit.
He's a cycler as well. Cyclist.
Is he?
Big cyclist. Yeah, big cyclist. That's irrelevant, really, but he's spent a lot of time on a bike, yeah.
No, he's looking good. So it's a left-footed strike from outside the area. I wonder if this is Locatelli again. Left-footed, tall, looks like him. He scored the first. The first was a doozy. We'll talk about it. It's Locatelli's second goal. Low left-footed shot outside the area. Keeper didn't move. Italy 2-0 up, and a tip-off happening. I will talk to you about Italy in a second. So I said there were two clips in the Damien Delaney fan club. We had Gabaldon. And then, now, to say you were chuffed with this is an understatement. I texted you about this because I knew you'd be delighted. I knew you'd be delighted. So picture the scene. It's Nathan Murphy. It's Eamon Dunphy. It's Delaney. They're sitting on the pitch. They're sitting on the pitch. They're chewing the fat. And Nathan takes a chance and he wants to know what Dunphy makes of the new breed of pundit out there, including one Damien Delaney. At which point you could see Delaney's body language tense up a touch and look over to see what Dunphy was going to say.
What about Damien Delaney as a pundit?
He's excellent. He's articulate. He knows his football. And like all Cork people, he can express himself. He's very, very, very good. He's the young, new generation. And, you know, when I watch him on Virgin, it's a pleasure.
Thank you, Eamon.
I mean it. I was running the show, you'd be wherever I could get you into whatever I was doing, because you know your stuff. You can express yourself, which is hugely important, and you're honest.
You're fist bumping the air. You're fist bumping right there in the background.
Well, I tell you, when you said there that you tensed up when you asked the question, I more than tensed up. I genuinely thought, oh my God, please, Nate, why? Because he's liable, or you know, he could come out with anything, you know. And I just thought, oh, if he cuts me in half here, I've got no comeback. You just got to accept it.
Oh, man, but, I really wish he had. No. Of course he wasn't. He wasn't going to cut you in half. He wasn't. But he went a little above and beyond. He was very generous. So it was very genuine. Nice. Yeah, I could see you were delighted.
Listen, the first 12 minutes here, Joe, is the best 12 minutes you may have ever had. It was brilliant.
Yeah, sorry, I don't know what's going on here. This is the nicest I've ever been to you, and it's going to stop right now. So I hereby bring to an end session one of the Damien Delaney fan club. So let's talk about a few things. You've been keeping an eye on Italy this evening. They were very impressive, obviously, on Friday night, the opening night of the tournament. It looks like that was no fluke, like they've pretty much picked up where they left off.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not a fluke. I mean, the record leading into this tournament was incredible. 25 wins or undefeated. It's an incredible record that they had coming into it. They're a really well-oiled machine. They're a team with not many superstars. Obviously, all the players are really well-known, but there's no main man that, you know, the media probably always want to get a hold of. Very diligent, very well-organized. Obviously, Mancini is that type of manager. When he's at Man City, it's the same. Hard taskmaster. I would assume that he is the boss, and that's why no star has really kind of stuck his head up to kind of be the main man, because Roberto Mancini probably suppresses all that and focuses so much on the team. And that's what they look right now. Their midfield three is so impressive. Jorginho at the base of it, Locatelli, who scored two tonight, and a player that I tipped to be in the team of the tournament at the end of it, in Barella, because I watched so much of him for Inter Milan, and he is a dynamo in midfield. He really is. I mean, his stature is very, very small, but if you look up the very definition of the word, all action, I'm sure he would be there, because a picture of him would be there, because he just defends, he attacks, everything is at a million miles an hour. His passing, everything is perfect about him. He is a modern prototype, top level midfield player, and I really enjoy watching him play. Love him for Inter Milan, and he's started great in this tournament as well.
Right, okay. 24 years of age, only really got going at Inter Milan last year. Maybe a late bloomer. He was with Cagliari, 105 appearances there, and then had a loan spell at Inter, and now they've bought him. So he's kind of in his first season plus with Inter. He has 25 Italian caps, and that's with Verratti to come back into that midfield as well. So that's pretty tidy.
I'm not sure he'll come straight back in, because Locatelli scoring two tonight, I'm pretty sure, has sealed his position in the team for the foreseeable future. But I mean, what a guy to have to come off the bench, you know, absolutely fantastic footballer as well. But when you look at what Barella brings to the side, that all action, kind of box to box, intense type of play, I struggle to see him getting back in. But again, it's good for Italy.
Yeah. And so on Friday in particular, and looking at the bits I've seen tonight, it's a similar story. You've got Bonucci and Chiellini still there, hilariously. I mean, I feel like they'll be there in 20 years' time. And then you've got that midfield three you talked about, and the two fullbacks really bombed on. You know, you think of like Trippier and Walker really stayed at home on Sunday, but I thought Italy would be ultra-defensive. But you've got Di Lorenzo, a left-back, and Spinazzola pushing on. And then the likes of Insigne and Berardi coming inside a little bit, and you've got overloads, and suddenly that's all very, very difficult to play against. Like, there's kind of a lot going on there. It's quite dynamic.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's absolutely fantastic to watch him. I mean, when you look at, I suppose, with the exception of Locatelli, who does seem like a physically imposing type of player, you know, Immobile, Insigne, Barella, Jorginho, I mean, they're very, very, very lightweight, but they're very, very hardworking. They're not the most biggest physical of teams, but their intensity and everything that they do is fantastic. And when you have a team that is as dialed in as what they are, every player knows his job and every player is carrying it out to perfection, then the team comes to the fore.
I saw a few people wondering, do they have enough cutting edge? So like Insigne really catches the eye, so small and busy. And Immobile leading the line, he scored 29 goals in 49 for Lazio last year. And the season before that, he scored 42 in 47, which is an outrageous haul. So is he going to blossom here? Do you rate Immobile?
Well, just to kind of expand on that, I don't think Italy rely on individual, you know, superstar score all the goals, you know, maybe to the extent what England might do with Kane or something like this. But it's the collective with Italy. I think the whole team operates so well that, you know, every player does what he's been asked to do and cracks appear. So it's the strength of the group or the collective as opposed to, you know, the rest of the team just try and keep a clean sheet and get the ball to Immobile because or a number nine or a superstar, a badge or whatever you want to call it. Because if that player has an off day or if the 11 can't keep or the other 10 can't keep a clean sheet, then you're in trouble. I think it's a fantastic way that Italy have gone about it, and they're a joy to watch. They really, really are. And they're not a sit-back, soak-up pressure type of team either, like you said there. Those little dinos rolling inside and Immobile stretching it, even though he's not the biggest and he's not the most powerful of runner, he's not bad runner in behind, and he does run down the sides. And he's got a great first touch. Whenever the ball gets fired into him, it always sticks. Very, very rarely we just see it bounce off him. So he provides a great focal point or a option in behind for players to slide balls down the side. So they're a really well put together team, really, really well coached, and the balance is fantastic.
Yeah, very interesting. So they're going deep in this tournament.
Oh, I think they'll win it. I really do. I think it's between them and France.
Okay.
I really do. I think these guys are just on a roll. The momentum they have is, you can't put a price on that when you're on the type of run that they're on.
And funny, Bonucci said, and obviously he's been around a while, you're just reminding me, he said, this is the best team spirit, he says, I've ever encountered. At no time have there been any issues in the squad. It's such a tight-knit group. It's little wonder that we're getting results. So unbeaten in 27, soon to be 28. This will be their 10th win in a row and their 10th clean sheet in a row as well. So that was kind of an interesting comment from Bonucci as well. Best team spirit he's ever encountered.
You know why that ends up being like that, Joe? Because of the manager. Because the manager is the biggest personality, right? And it doesn't allow for any other superstar, as I said earlier, to kind of stick his head up or stick his hand up, and then the manager's got to treat him differently, or the manager has to have a different set of rules for him. I mean, Mancini is the biggest personality. He is a real tough taskmaster, and any player that sticks his head up gets slapped down very, very quickly, and he's the boss, and all the players fall into line and do what they're told, and that's the benefit of having a real strong manager.
Okay. So that's Italy this evening. A question I want to ask you about. So we're into day six, as I've said, and we've seen all the teams now at least once, and we'll talk France-Germany maybe a bit later on. One of the things which is so often said now, and it's just taken for granted that it's true, is that international football is a good bit behind Champions League football now. So tournament football is behind the Champions League at its best. And I see where they're coming from. Can you give me your sense on the differences in what you're seeing over the last, say, 6 days versus Champions League? Not so much in terms of was it a great game or was it exciting, because that can sway you. I'm talking more in terms of standard. It's also been said in the last few days by, I've heard journalists say it, so I kind of want your take. I know you know your tactics, that the tactics at Champions League level are far more advanced than the tactics at international level. So these are the things that are being said now about international football. So I'm curious if that's occurring to you over the last 6 days.
I don't think so. I think the application of the tactics at Champions League level probably is a touch more intense because the players are at it every day. But I think tournament football, European Championship football, is equally as good, but in a different type of way. All the players there are fully focused. They're not worrying about, you know, playing Champions League on a Wednesday night, playing a league game. And sometimes players get into kind of periods in the season where they're tired or they're kind of just digging in to get through. You know, come to Christmas, it's difficult. And sometimes, you know, it can get like that a little bit. But at international football, tiredness goes out the window, because when you're playing for your country, there is an element of, you know, energy that comes into your body that you just, you know, that patriotic feeling that you have. One thing I suppose to touch on the tactics side of it is a lot of countries, their tactics or the way they play kind of represent the culture of the country. So at club level, it's very easy to implement a certain type of style. But, you know, if the culture or the way of a country, you know, before Ireland, you know, under Trapattoni, we played a very, very agricultural style, and it was like, you know, that's the culture, the Irish Jack Charlton way. We're up and at them, we're in people's faces, you know, we never say die type of attitude. And you go through right all the other countries, you know, the French would be temperamental, they could be good or bad, and, you know, so that element comes into it as well when it's your country. But I think the intensity's been really good. You know, even watching Italy tonight against Switzerland, they have been bang at it, and in tournament football they always will be.
Yeah. Is international football slower than what we're seeing at Champions League? I've heard that as well being said.
I don't think it is, no. I just think that at this stage of the tournament, there's, you know, the expansion to 24 teams. There probably is maybe 4 to 6 teams that really shouldn't be there.
Sure.
I think when the tournament was 16, it was probably much better because you got a much, much higher standard much, much earlier.
Yeah.
So, you know, those games like Poland and Slovakia, you can watch that and say, of course, that's nowhere near Champions League level. But then you watch the game last night against France and Germany, and that is, you know, two heavyweights coming together. Even Switzerland tonight probably are just, you know, at the bottom end of that 16-team kind of tournament you'd like to see. So there probably are 6 to 8 teams there that shouldn't be. But I promise you, in the next few weeks, once we get out of the group stage, you will really see the intensity kick up.
So you're not quite buying that thing that's been said then a lot recently. International football is a good bit behind. Okay.
No, it's not behind. It's just slightly different.
Yeah.
But it has its own qualities that Champions League football or club football doesn't have. You know, when you, as I said, that patriotic duty that people feel, they know they're playing for their country. All these players would have grown up watching their country playing in Euros, and they all would have dreamed of doing it. So they do have that focus and concentration. So it's a different type of intensity, in my opinion. I think tactically the players are as dialed in as what they are in club football. But as I said, there's probably just 6 to 8 teams here that shouldn't really be there.
Yeah, I do. It strikes me every time the international tournaments come around, the patriotic element. There are times where you're watching the Champions League and it's a little bit hard to get too excited about the oligarchs team against whichever state is pumping money into the other team. And the players are like, where do I live? Is it London, Paris, Manchester, whatever? I'm just here, you know, regardless. And then you do see that extra little element when the teams are playing for their country with their fellow countrymen. And people say, oh, it doesn't mean as much as it used to. I disagree with that totally. I think for all of these top players, it means every bit as much as it ever did. I don't think international football has gone into irrelevance at all when it comes to tournament football, whatever about like grim qualifiers away to Georgia in October.
Yeah.
That's a different matter. Yeah. But once they're here, I think this is defining for them.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. You know, for me growing up, you know, I wanted to be Paul McGrath, Ray Houghton, because, you know, that type of, you know, feeling that these guys help bring to our country, I grew up wanting to have that, you know. And these guys are all the same, you know. I think a lot of these guys would have been aware of the stories of, you know, the Marco Tardelli and the infamy that he has from the celebration right through to the Paolo Maldinis, to Cannavaros, you know. All these guys probably would have grown up watching the 2006 World Cup winning Italian team, and a lot of them probably want to emulate that, and that's where that patriotic feeling comes from.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm even trying to work out here. So Locatelli is 23. 06, this is dangerous doing this on air. 06 is, say, 15 years ago, I think, yes. Yeah. So Locatelli, 15 from 23. Locatelli was 8 years old when Italy won the World Cup in 06. Are you telling me he wasn't losing his mind? Of course he was.
Absolutely, of course he was, you know. And his dad probably did tell him stories about Marco Tardelli, you know, and people like that. So it's fantastic. And that's what these players are playing for. And that's why they want to be part of that Italian history going forward. They would love to have a major championship under their belt, you know.
I'll talk France-Germany on the far side of this ad break. One quick one. I suspect, because again, it's nice to have a player's perspective here, because I've talked many to the lads on show about the Eriksen situation, horrific as it was and horrible. I suspect you would have been one of the players who, once you knew that Eriksen was okay and you'd spoken to him and heard from him, the choice between let's finish the game or let's come back and do it again tomorrow. I have you, for some reason, in the roll up the sleeves, let's get out there and finish this today camp. What do you think?
I don't know, Joe.
Right, okay.
I tell you what, I thought about this today, actually. Funny enough, when I was out on the bike, I was kind of moseying along and I was thinking about it because I read an article on Seaman Kerr. And his kind of response to the whole thing, and he done ever so well. But I think that the selfishness in me, my in gut reaction would have been, now isn't the time to finish the game,
right?
Because it was Finland, and if Christian Eriksen was okay, which he seemed to be, then my focus would have straight away switched to 3 points in the group against a team that, realistically, if we're to get out of the group, we have to beat in Finland. So I think if I was, you know, captain, or I was in a committee that was making that decision, I would have been forcefully moving towards coming back and starting again tomorrow. Let everyone go home, let the emotion wear off. Christian's fine, but we need to win this game because there's still a tournament going on right now. And that would have been the kind of professional might seem a little bit cold, but as soon as I thought he was okay, I would have switched to the 3 points.
That's interesting. See, I had you cold in a different way, because I know you would be cold and unemotional, and I don't mean that as a slight on you. I just know, yeah. I just get that sense of you. So you're even colder than I'm giving you credit for. You're like, how do we win this game? That's the most important thing here. So yeah, it makes sense.
I would have locked the changing room door and probably told the Federation or the UEFA official to do one and said, everyone's going home, we're all getting a night's sleep, we need to go and see Christian, put it to bed, rehydrate, get food back into us, and we start the game again tomorrow, and we should beat Finland.
Because Seaman Shar had to request to come off, the captain. He didn't finish the game, you know? That just shows what it took out of them. So it's nice to get an insight into what you're thinking about for these cycles. So it's kind of like 10 minutes on the Christian Eriksen situation, the other 4 hours on like what Eamon Dunphy said about me over and over again. That's kind of how that cycle goes for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We'll take a short break. I do want to talk a lot to you about France against Germany last night. And someone's texted in, I'd forgotten this, of course. You were at Leicester as a young, very young player with Mancini. So they're curious for your memories of Mancini, the player then. We'll take a short break. Still Italy 2, Switzerland 0. Damon Delaney sticking with us. Back in 1 sec.
It takes courage to admit you're wrong. With Allianz Car Insurance, you can also add windscreen cover. Get a quote online and save 20%. Visit allianz.ie today. Allianz. We cover courage. Allianz PLC is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Standard acceptance criteria and policy conditions apply. Minimum premium of €284. The discount does not apply to windscreen cover, which is an optional extra, and an additional premium applies.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power's Save Our Game. England's goals total 10k so far for Irish football. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
You're welcome back. So still Italy 2, Switzerland 0. It's the football show and Off the Ball with Paddy Power. Save Our Game, donating 10k to Irish football for every goal England score at the Euros. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. Some breaking news as well from Dundalk, who have confirmed Vinnie Perth has returned as head coach. They've just released a statement. So Perth returns to Dundalk, is now confirmed. I'm sure we'll speak to Vinnie on the show tomorrow or in the next day or two. And Damon Delaney is still with us. Italians still 2-0 up. So just before we talk France-Germany, somebody texted in, a Paul in Cork, reminding me that you were at Leicester when you went over as a teenager / early 20s player with Roberto Mancini, who at that stage, I presume, was into veteran status. How was he?
Didn't speak much English, but he came in and was very, very polite. One of the cup games I played in, it was Aston Villa away in a cup game, and I remember he stood behind me in the tunnel before we walked out, and he must have sensed that I was nervous or something like that, but he put his hands on my shoulders and he started singing that Don't Worry Be Happy song to me. So I was kind of only 19 at the time, but that's my abiding Roberto Mancini memory, to be honest with you. And I kind of laughed and he laughed. But I think that was about the as much English as he had. But I remember him being very, very respectful. Really, really nice man. Fabulous player, because obviously me growing up in the 90s, watching, you know, Channel 4's Italian football, and he was such a huge part of 90s Italian football. I remember when I first seen him or trained with him, I remember thinking, I used to pretend to be you when I was a kid on the housing estate in Cork, which was really surreal for me, to be honest. He was the first real heavyweight superstar that I'd met, you know. But they're my Roberto Mancini memories.
You say he's a very nice man. Did he strike you as somebody who might have had a temper? Because that was definitely one of the themes after he left City. Certainly not everyone was like crying into their coffee.
No, I don't believe I saw that.
Okay.
Really, but he only played a handful of games. He didn't train all that often as well. I think he was old. He was 35, 36, really. So he kind of didn't really do a whole pile. He was just kind of there. I'm not really sure how he ended up there or why he ended up at Leicester. But
maybe he wasn't sure either.
Yeah, he played a couple of games, and I suppose maybe it was something he always wanted experience playing in the Premier League, which he did. But as I said, for someone like me to be showing up every day training with someone I used to pretend to be while I was scoring goals on an estate, then that was fantastic.
Well, look, it's working for him. He did win a Premier League as well at Man City, so I'm sure he feels vindicated, whatever his approach, and going well with Italy now. So France-Germany last night, 1-0 win. How impressed were you with France. What did you make of this game?
Yeah, really impressed with France. Really impressed with Pogba. Kante. You just wonder when that Giroud and Mbappe story broke. You just thought, oh, please, no. But again, I think very, very similar to the Italians. They got a really strong manager. And even though Mbappe went public with that, that could have escalated. That could have got out of control. But I'd be fairly sure that Deschamps grabbed hold of that situation very, very, very quickly. Obviously, Giroud said what he said. And then Mbappe said what he said. But then the manager, I think, quashed any beef or quelled any flames that were potentially getting bigger. You know, the French have had their problems at major tournaments. And when you get big egos and big superstars, you have to have a huge ego as a manager, or a huge presence as a manager, that the players have some degree to be scared of you a little bit, that, you know, when you speak that they listen. Because someone like Mbappe isn't going to tell Deschamps, you know, I don't care what you say, he can't speak to me like that, and then it does get out of control. So it all seemed to be put to bed, and that was the one thing I was looking for in the performance. Was there any little hangover? Was there any, you know, French or kind of uneasiness, or was it not a fluid performance or anything like that? It was, and it was fantastic from them. They were brilliant. And I was really impressed with Pogba.
I'll come back to Pogba. I thought they were really good as well. They've been accused of only kind of just doing enough to win and being a little bit too pragmatic, and they get a goal in front and then they sort of sit back and invite Germany on and hit them on the counter-attack when actually they should be good enough to go out and score 2, 3, 4. I'm not sure how much I agree with it. Like, they did have two goals ruled out and they did hit the post. But that's definitely out there, that this France team could be doing more.
Yeah, but you see, I mean, you have to take into account who they're playing. You know, it's Germany and they got their noses in front. And this is what winners do. You know, there's a sense that this is a huge scout for them psychologically, mentally. And what they don't want to do is get carried away and think 1-0 against Germany, it should be 2 or 3. And then they're conceding two goals later on, when in reality, Germany shouldn't have a looking. So they just put the game to bed brilliantly, professionally, expertly. They didn't want to get carried away. They don't care if people are saying, you know, they should be beating Germany 2 or 3. They beat them. You know, there will be games where they will win 2 or 3 and they will get to put on a show. But I think that just shows how dialed in they are as players, that they didn't get carried away, that they realised that Germany were a kind of a fading force or a wounded animal, really, that was on its last legs. But like every wounded animal, it always has one last, you know, attack in it. And I think France didn't want to get caught because of their arrogance, or because of their kind of passive or arrogance, I suppose, really, of trying to tack on 2 or 3.
Or have a good time and look at us and showboat a bit, yeah. Poor old Mats Hummels, when Mbappe, I think, he gave him about 15 yards and still ran by him. It was one of the funnier moments. And then Hummels did well not to give away a penalty. It was kind of frightening pace from Mbappe.
To all of us, Joe.
Oh my God, it's just so unfair.
Me back in the league. That's when you know it's over.
it was just electric when he did it. And so, I mean, his goal was brilliant, the disallowed one, and he could have had an assist. So we could really be sitting here raving about France. Actually, in a way, Deschamps might be happy. 1-0 keeps a lid in it, but that could have been 3 or 4 and suddenly everyone's losing the run of themselves. So look, you mentioned Pogba. You know what the question is. So why don't we see this more from him at United? What is your read on this?
Look, I mean, there's a lot of people can see the reason why. I mean, there is. Yeah, I saw the article that David Snaid was doing today about, you know, he kind of simplified the problem down to he's playing in a better team in France, which is true. But I think that's a simplistic way of looking at it. The main reason for me is N'Golo Kanté. N'Golo Kanté allows France to indulge Pogba and gives Pogba the creative freedom that he needs and the space that he needs, and allows him to make the mistakes. And France are, of course, a better team. So I do agree with David on that point. And they win games. And obviously, when you win games of football, it does cover up any kind of poor Pogba decisions, because if France were losing games, you know, they'd be looking for reasons, and Pogba's kind of sauntering around the pitch. But when he does saunter around the pitch, people don't really notice it or pay attention to it, because they win games of football. But the main reason for me is N'Golo Kanté. He does the job of two midfield players. He does the job of what Fred and McTominay does. But unfortunately, you know, 2-1 doesn't go, and Manchester United have Bruno Fernandes playing in the 10. And, it, you know, I've made this point several times, yeah. So I'm not going to go over it again about the centre-backs needing to be protected and all that. So that's it, really. If Manchester United want to keep Pogba, sorry, just one last, if they want to keep Pogba, then he's the type of guy you need to build a team around.
Yeah, because I threw it out on Twitter. I was like, bloody hell, this lad be picking up a Ballon d'Or if he could play for France every week, you know, because he's so eye-catching. And the overwhelming response from everybody was Kante as well. That's what everybody said. And I was thinking, look, I get it. Of course I get it. I get that he's doing the job defensively that unleashes Pogba. It still also even feels more than that, though. So I do think Kante's part of it. But there are games that Manchester United, many games across the Premier League, absolutely boss and don't really need to worry too much defensively. And still, you don't quite see that Pogba. And you still don't see that level of focus about him and sharpness about him and attention to detail. He can be so lax at times for United. It's like Kante plus there is a level of focus or something about him that is not there at Old Trafford enough.
That's fair enough, right? But the couple of times that he plays Pogba as a defensive number six, I'm pretty sure he has been given the instructions to have some sort of defensive mind about him, you know? They don't give him that creative freedom. Kante gives him that. That he, if he wants to wander and drift, you know, I've said to you many times before, Pogba's a joiner-inner. You know, he'll follow the ball. He plays on instinct. He's a wonderfully gifted player. But you need to give the guy room to breathe. If you start giving him jobs on a football pitch of protect the centre-back or do certain things, then I think his focus kind of gets a bit muddled. You just need to put him on the pitch and say, go and do your thing. And you need to insulate around him for that. Fortunately, in France, they do have N'Golo Kante that does allow him to do that. And he does drift out wide. He drifts up front. He drifts back. And Kante gets out of his way if he comes and gets it off to the centre-backs. But look, of course, he has had a tough time at Manchester United in so far as he has been made a scapegoat for a number of years at Manchester United.
I think that's part of it. Because even before Fernandes arrived, and Italy had just had another one-on-one here and keepers made a good save, so they're pushing for a third with 8 minutes to go. Even before Fernandes arrived and at times they were building the team around Pogba or trying to at least make him their main creative outlet and protecting the back four, I still don't feel often enough you saw what you see from France. Now, it's not like he's never had a good game for United either, but like, I don't know, you still wouldn't feel all that confident about buying the two best defensive central midfielders around or going and buying Kante. I still don't even know would you see that kind of Pogba at United. I feel like there's something not right there.
I think as well, it's worth pointing out that the defensive line that France hold is an awful lot higher.
Okay.
And a lot of the times he picks up possession, it is higher up the pitch. Whereas when Manchester United centre-backs sink, you know, almost like, you know, if you cut a hole in the bottom of a bag of sand, the whole thing just, you know, falls out. And that's what Manchester United centre-backs do when they drop off to the edge of the 18-yard box.
Yeah.
And it drags the whole team down with it, like that bag of sand emptying. And Pogba does find himself back 10, 15 yards outside his own box very, very often. Whereas at France, I mean, this is one of the funny things, like, you know, Man United, they're talking about Man United buying Varane. I mean, if you paired Varane with Maguire, I mean, how would that work? You know, Varane was going to want to get up to the halfway line to give his midfield players a better platform to work from. But look, I don't want to go down that path again. We've been down there too often, Joe, haven't we?
No, it's the Euros. We need to get a break from talking about Man United.
My life is in a good place, though. I don't want to call you that. I'll be again.
And come here, do you think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is the man to lead them to Premier League? No, we won't do it. One other thing about that game last night is Germany. I get their back three. I think I sort of get what they're doing in midfield and the wing backs. I don't fully understand Gnabry as a false nine and Müller and Kai Havertz behind. What's the deal there? What are they trying to do?
They're basically in a transitional period, really. They're not maybe the success they've had over the last, you know, since the World Cup in 2014. You know, normally you want that kind of continuity of young guys coming in, but maybe Lowe losing his job now and a fresh voice coming in. But they just look like a team that don't quite know what they are.
Right.
They've got a lot of good players. They have some world-class players left over. They have some players that are clearly past it. They're just kind of caught in between three stools, really. And they haven't really nailed down what they want to be. You know, they went down the road of leaving out Müller and Boateng and saying, okay, and I think that was Lowe basically saying, listen, we need to cut ties and build. And if it takes one or two tournaments to get back for Qatar or this European Championships, but, you know, he left those guys out and then forced to bring them back in, and it just all got messy for him. And I mean, in the job as long as what he is, it can be difficult. So look, they're just a team that need unraveling a little bit, an identity put in there, and it might need that mean that some superstars or some bigger name players that are slightly past it or kind of culled, and there's some young guys coming in. Because German football, the Bundesliga, is in a really good place right now. Bayern Munich are a very, very strong team that will always form the basis of the German national team. So I just think they need a new voice and a new identity and a new kind of direction, really.
So basically, absolutely everything.
Other
than that, they're okay.
They're still a world-class team, but you know, when you think of Germany, they should be, you know, at the very least making the semi-finals in these type of tournaments. And they still might, because they are Germany, but you just don't see it with them. They're just a little bit, something not quite right there.
Yeah.
And as I said, they just need to just unravel a little bit or iron out a couple of problems and they'll come again. They got a lot of young players.
It seems Antonio Rudiger is going to avoid punishment for his nibble on Paul Pogba, which is just interesting move, Rudiger. Really, I mean, a gazillion cameras. I'm not sure what you're doing, but it seems...
He really lacked the Luis Suarez kind of, you know, lunge forward where we just see the bite. It was more, he kind of can say I was kind of resting my forehead on his back, really, you know.
Not enough chomp in it to get him in big
Not
trouble.
Not enough chomp, that's what I was looking for.
And then the Pavard situation. So, like, headway, a concussion charity came out and said the whole episode was sickening, was the words they used. So Pavard came out afterwards and spoke to the media at length. If you didn't see this, he got a kind of a hip to the head and then he was either unconscious or pretty close to it because he couldn't really defend himself and he hit the deck again and took a wallop off the ground with his head. So kind of two bangs to the head. So he said afterwards on beIN Sports, "I took a hell of a shock. I was a little knocked out for 10 to 15 seconds. After that, it was better." And people have, you know, been just disgusted at the whole thing. UEFA pointed out that there was a concussion charter signed by all the 24 teams before the tournament, France included. And what the charter said was, "We confirm that if a player of our team is suspected of having suffered a concussion, he will be immediately removed from the pitch, whether in training or match play." And they signed that. Italy have just scored a third. Immobile has scored a third. I think the keeper made a mistake, but it's Italy 3-0. So France signed this, and I guess what jumps out to everyone, one is there is absolutely no doubt, if the wording of the charter is suspected of having a concussion, well, I think if the player himself is saying I've been knocked out, then you could definitely suspect he had a concussion. And the other thing which kind of jumped out to me is, if this was in rugby where there's a huge issue, Pavard just being sent out to go and do a bit of media and tell the world, "Oh yeah, no, I was knocked out," would not happen in a million years. This would be like an absolute nightmare for them if a rugby player had stayed in the pitch after that, and he would certainly not be doing media. It would be, you're not saying a word, like cover up job, or like, we need to get our ducks in a row here. This is a scandal. It shows how far behind football are that they're like, yeah, no, actually go talk about your concussion and not coming off. I mean,
I think that the medics probably assumed or presumed or hoped that he understood that wasn't to be said, you know, maybe it was something. But I think when message got back that he went on air and said it, I think the medical team in the French camp just went off, for goodness sake. Look, it's a difficult issue. I think there's responsibility on the player as well, you know, to inform the medics on the pitch that he did lose consciousness.
But you know, they never do. Rugby has proved that it has to be taken out of the player's hand, genuinely.
But I watched it. Did you think he was knocked out? I mean, even if you had an independent body looking at TV cameras, in rugby you can see it because they get a ferocious hit to the head.
I would have said, "Oh, it looks a bit unnatural." See, there's no HIA in football, I guess, is the problem to assess him. So that's one of the things, I guess, which kind of has to come into it. Yeah, it didn't look great. Now, to be fair, I only watched the replays after I'd heard about it, so I'm probably projecting a bit on it.
Yeah.
But I think at the time on TV they were giving out about it, weren't they?
I don't know, to be honest. I didn't think he looked like he was knocked clean out. I mean, football players go down all the time and don't move, you know, all the time for a variety of reasons. It's a bit more difficult in football and rugby. Sometimes it can be a bit more clear cut. I don't know. I'm not an expert in it, to be honest with you, but players are going to want to play. That's what I do know. And it's a very, very difficult issue. I don't know what the solution is to it, really. You know, I think if the medics did say to Pavard, you know, "We think that you might have had a serious head injury, we're taking you off." I mean, I don't know, Joe, to be honest. Yeah, I'm not.
Fair enough. You weren't there. I mean, I think that's basically what should have happened if we're all, you know, benefit of hindsight. And I think this might speed up some kind of head injury assessment type facility in football, or an independent doctor sits in the stands, watches all the TV footage. If he or she sees something they don't like, they say, yeah, sorry, Pavard's coming off. I think he may have a concussion. Whereas last night, just it wasn't handled. I think they even put like a magic sponge water on him. You know, it was kind of something from the 1970s territory. There's a couple of people want to know what you're making of England. Obviously, they play Scotland on Friday night. What did you make of, what was it, Sterling, Kane, Foden, Mount, Rice, Phillips, Trippier at left back?
Yeah. Listen, I think you got it spot on. I know there's a lot of people saying, why does he play Sterling? He plays Sterling because when you're playing football games, you need a threat in behind.
Yeah.
And if you were to front load your team with Harry Kane, who's not... He's just running behind Harry Kane, really. I mean, he does if he has to, but he's not a natural, powerful runner. He's not going to stretch teams. And if you front load your team with Harry Kane, Mount, Grealish, and Foden, you're going to have four players continuously looking to go and get the ball to feet, and the opposition is going to squeeze the pitch continuously and make life very, very difficult for you.
Yeah. So you wouldn't have Grealish in ahead of Foden either, then, if Sterling is your pace?
I think, exactly. I think you can go with pace and two of the three that I just mentioned.
Yeah.
But I think you need a threat in behind. I mean, if you went with Dominic Calvert-Lewin up front, you might be able to squeeze in three number 10s. And I think that would be the way to go. Because then you would just say to Calvert-Lewin, don't ever come to feet. There's no point. We don't need you. We have three number 10s. You know, there's plenty of options for the midfield players there. So you just stretch the pitch in behind. It might mean you're not really involved in the game, but just keep running in behind. Keep the centre-backs pinned back. Keep them narrow. You know, don't come over to one side. Stay in between them. So the two centre-backs have to stay narrow and close together. And if you get the centre-backs staying narrow and close together, the two centre-backs will be less tempted to go in and engage with the three number 10s, because sometimes if the centre forward goes and stands on the left side centre back, the right side centre back might feel like he's not doing a whole pile, and then he might see a bit of Grealish in a pocket and think, you know what, I can go in there because, you know, Harry Kane's taken care of, or Dominic Calvert-Lewin's taken care of, and then you cause problems. But if you get the number 9 to stay high, stay central, keep the two centre backs narrow, keep them away, then you create these nice little pockets for three number 10s, and it's a fabulous way of playing. But Harry Kane's going to play. So if Harry Kane plays, I don't think there's a better player at running in behind from deep. We see it so many times for Manchester City. He just runs in behind numerous, dozens and dozens of times in the game. So I think you have to play him. I mean, you know, I know the fans want to see the best players playing, but the manager's got to think about the team. A bit like Italy are doing at the minute, you know? The team is what matters.
Makes perfect sense. Listen, we're out of time. I 10 other things I wanted to talk to you about, but that was great. You're living up to Eamon Dunphy's billion here. That was good stuff. No, listen, thanks a million, man. I'll talk to you in a week or two and we'll catch up. Thanks, Damien.
Thanks, man. Thanks.
Cheers. Damien Delaney there with us, giving us his take on day 6 of the Euros. It just gone full time, by the way. Italy have beaten Switzerland by 3-0.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power's Save Our Game. Donating at least 100,000 to Irish football via England Goals this summer. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Are you ready for quick start car insurance? Get a quote today at GetZetGo.ie.